You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts its money where its fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network as the countdown to kickoff is officially on. That's right. This week, we have real football as the University of California and the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors are going to the land down under of Australia, which means the Olympics are done. The Euro Cup long done. Check. Baseball pennant chase, check. It means it's football season. And we've talked of football throughout the summer, but I feel as though today we officially kick things off. We're going for the two. Joseph Lisi, GoForTheTwo.com, will join us as not one, not two, not three. I sound like LeBron. Not four, not five, but six Notre Dame Fighting Irish college football players were arrested over the weekend. Weed, loaded guns, punching cops, getting into fights with chicks, all kinds of fun stuff. We break it down with Go For The Twos. Joseph Lisi, no line movement, incidentally. The Irish are still favored by three against the Texas Longhorns. Steve Merrill's going to join us. We'll talk some NFL preseason, maybe a little college, and some Major League Baseball. I guess you could say that's like the only thing going on right now that matters besides football. And I'm thinking football. And in fact, I'm a couple of days away before I start jumping in and breaking down week one. And I start circling the games that I'm going to take. I already have a couple of games circled, but I'm going to start digging deeper in the coming days. But we got a game at the end of the week. Steve Merrill joins us today. He also joins us on Friday. So next time me and Merrill speak, we'll be breaking down college football this Friday night. We're going to talk some NFL preseason football. Eric Bachman, FFPC, with a high rolling fantasy sharps a play. You can too. We're going to talk preseason football. Who's standing out right now? Who's struggling? What does this mean for the regular season? I am one of these people that do believe that the preseason is a precursor to the regular season, not from a win-loss record, but teams' issues are exposed. Teams' depths are exposed. And we'll break that down with Eric Bachman. So the Olympics are done. I want to congratulate and thank Brazil for welcoming the world. Spectacular games. Probably the best games ever when it comes to athletic accomplishments. I think maybe 1976 Montreal was right there. So many great future athletes and superstars came out of the Montreal Games. But if we look back on the Brazil Games and forget about Ryan Lochte and forget did anyone hear about any Zika virus? Did one person who went to the Games get a Zika virus? No, I don't think so. Hey, but besides the point, right? That doesn't matter. You're panicking about that then. But nevertheless, were there trouble with the Games? Of course there were. There's trouble everywhere. Hell, a bomb went off in Atlanta, all right? And if you want to talk about crime, do it on a motorcycle. Crashed his motorcycle a block from my house yesterday. People thought he'd crash his motorcycle. No, it turned out he got shot in some sort of weird hit right out of a movie. Dude gets shot driving, cops show up. It's like CSI. You know what, Jim? The motorcycle crash didn't kill him. The three bullets did. All right? That was about 30 seconds from where I was yesterday. Am I in fear? Ooh, no. Stuff happens. It happens in Brazil. You know what else happened in Brazil? Michael Phelps lit it up. Unbelievable. Torpedo-like speeds. Katie Ledecky. One of the moments had to be Neymar. Neymar dropping to his knees as Christ the Redeemer overlooks Brazil getting redemption. Redemption. Vendetta. They get it against the hated Germans who humiliated them on their home field on the same damn turf that they lost the World Cup semifinal in. There were some great Olympic stories across the board. But let's be honest, the star of the show, Usain Bolt. He's the star of the show. He's the one that people went to see. He's the one that people pay money to watch. He's the fastest man in the world. And I'll tell you what, from Alaska to Angola, people know who the fastest man in the world is, all right? People in Angola don't know that the Denver Broncos are the Super Bowl champions. You know, want to know why they don't care? And want to know why? Because they don't care. You know, you think Sidney Crosby, you think people in Montego Bay? Oh, that's Sidney Crosby, man. He's the Stanley Cup champ. No, he's just a white tourist. That's who he is. They don't know. You can go anywhere across the world, you know who the fastest man in the world is. It's as simple as that. And he's done it three freaking times over. Legend. Legend in a sport in which fractions, milliseconds, milliseconds actually cost you a championship. This guy's been able to do it three times, three Olympics in a row. 100 meters, 200 meters, relay, 100 meters, 200 meters. It's like a horse winning the Triple Crown three freaking times in a row. I don't think people get it. I don't think people get just how good he damn is. It's similar to Muhammad Ali, and it used to be that everybody knows who the heavyweight champ is. Now it's Tyson Fury. No one knows, all right? No one cares because, yeah, whatever. He kind of sucks. I can't believe he's the champ, but that's a rant for another day. But similar to Muhammad Ali, Bolt's got that charisma, arrogance, cockiness, flamboyance, yet humble at the same time and loved by everyone at the same time, including NFL coaches. And I was waiting. How long is it going to be before the Bolt to the NFL trend begins? And old Jim Caldwell, and I love you, Jim. I think you're a good coach. Jim Caldwell, the Detroit Lions, said, we'll give Bolt a chance at the wide receiver position. Gee, thanks, coach. That's pretty cool of you. That's like Maroon 5. That's like Maroon 5 telling Mick Jagger, hey, if you want to join the band, we can find a spot for you. That's like Guy Ferrari going to France and telling a guy, a Michelin 5-star chef, I got a spot open in my burger joint at Daytona Beach if you want it. Bolt made $32 million last year before he just won another three gold medals. I don't think that he wants to drive in from Flint into Detroit. I think he's doing pretty well living in Montego Bay in Miami with the supermodels, making $32 million a year and not getting punched in the face by Josh Norman. And listen, it's ridiculous that people bring this up. I remember years ago, the Cantu guy, one of the top rugby players in the world at the time, Jerry Jones and the Cowboys wanted him, said, I'll offer you $5 million a year. He said, I make 12 from Nike as is. I know it blows people's minds, but there are people making money that aren't in the National Football League, all right? And another thing, as great as Bolt is, just because he can run fast doesn't mean he's going to be a good wide receiver. The great Justin Gatlin actually tried to play football. He couldn't make the Hamilton Tiger Cats, all right? There's a big difference between running fast. Richard Sherman isn't waiting 5 yards off the starting block of the 100 meters to push Usain Bolt on his ass. Now, is he? It's a little bit different. And I'll tell you what, football is a lot like The Simpsons, which is a lot like life. It all always sort of comes together. And life is like football. Doesn't matter how fast you are. If you don't know where you're running, all you're going to do is end up nowhere fast. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. All right, let's roll. Game Time Decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues. Are you ready for some football? I know I'm ready. Yeah, you guys, cameraman, we got some rookies on the camera today. It's like preseason here today. We're going to see if they make the cut and make the team. But considering our starters are pretty shaky to begin with, you guys are doing pretty good. We'll see if we can catch a football. But I know we got our boy Warman in master control. I think he was here, actually, when I rifled a football near the camera once and gave him a heart attack. These cameras are like $65,000 each, actually. But I'm like Tyrod Taylor, man. Pinpoint accuracy. If I wanted to, I could smash the middle of this camera right now, but I won't because I need this gig right now. Got a lot of issues. I've already gotten away with enough stuff. I'm not sure what he'd do. He deliberately smashed a camera with a football. All right, but hey, I'm ready for some football. So is Steve Merrill. What's up, Steve?
Hey, Gabe, how you doing?
I'm ready. I feel like Sean Hannity. I understand why Sean Hannity throws the Nerf football in the Fox studio, eh? He doesn't have the real one. We got an official NFL ball right here.
He actually whips that thing pretty good when I've seen him do it.
Yeah, but it's a Nerf ball.
Yeah, but those Nerf balls are tricky to spiral sometimes. They're like, it's like Shaquille O'Neal shooting a basketball. It's like, the size of a teeny little ball in his big hand. Those Nerf balls, sometimes are hard to spiral correctly.
Well, I tell you what, considering, man, that Bryn Renner just signed an NFL deal with the Pittsburgh Steelers, there's a pretty low bar set of getting to be one of these like third string goofballs in the NFL. You're saying a Sean Hannity could be a third string quarterback.
He probably could, actually. It really is amazing how few good quarterbacks there are. I was watching these preseason games. You know, we talk about it. They're always decided in the third, fourth quarter in week ones and two, you know, by the backups. And you realize how bad some of these third and fourth stringers really are.
Yeah, what's amazing to me is there's 338 million people in the United States of America, yet there's probably only about 40, 45 decent quarterbacks. You know, let's say that they're starting 32, and then, you know, maybe like half the league have decent backups, but it really is amazing that there's not even like just 100 dudes that are really, really good. Or maybe there is, and they're not given the chance because they're shut down by the Mel Kuypers of the world, and you know, they don't fit the combine requirements. As a good example is Dak Prescott. You know, Dak Prescott wasn't being raved about by anybody, all right? I liked him. You know, I liked him. I thought that he should have went where he sort of did, like a fourth round type of guy. And, you know, I wondered about Dak. I looked at him either as he was a complete bust or he was going to be what he is right now. But it's a classic example. Everyone was like drooling about Carson Wentz. Everybody was freaking about Jared Goff. Here we are a couple of weeks into the preseason. Now people are saying it's the worst quarterback class ever.
Yeah, it's ironic that, you know, they have Prescott now. That means Romo will probably stay healthy for the rest of his career and never miss another game.
You know, right.
They really could have used him last year when they were a playoff team and missed it because Romo went down. I don't even know. There's 32 decent quarterbacks. I mean, you really look at the bottom tier teams.
True.
It's hard to say those guys are even starter quality. The thing that gets me, though, is how difficult it is to project out of college which guys are going to be decent quarterbacks. You know, you look at Tom Brady. What was he, a sixth round pick? He maybe never even played had, you know, Bledsoe not gotten hurt that season.
Look at Tyrod Taylor right now, Steve, who I think is going to have another big year right now.
Yeah, and I wasn't big on him coming out either. I didn't even think he was a good college quarterback necessarily. You know, you very rarely see that where a guy is better in the NFL than in college. That's very rare.
He is, too. He is one of these deals. And it's funny because they remember him. He was pretty good at Virginia Tech. There was high expectations after Michael Vick, right? And Marcus Vick, et cetera. They had some pretty good quarterbacks there. Taylor was all right. They made it to the Orange Bowl when he was the quarterback. But look at the opposite, Steve. Logan Thomas. You know, when Logan Thomas was a freshman and even a sophomore, people said that's the next Cam Newton. That's a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. And right now we see he's one of these scrubs trying to hang on to be one of the top three guys.
Yeah, he's god awful. We talked about him last year. What was it? They were down to the third string. It looked like he might play a game last season, I think, in the regular season. And I remember just warning people how bad he is. I mean, obviously, Beamer's system at Virginia Tech was not a real, you know, pass-happy offensive system. He was more of a special teams guy, defensive guy, running guy. That'll change now with him retiring. But, yeah, it's difficult to project these guys, and especially when you get a guy coming from, like, North Dakota State, which is a 1AA program. I think the Cal quarterback, you know, you get a guy out of the Pac-12 that puts up big numbers, you figure he can do something, but even that doesn't necessarily translate. You know, you look at Ryan Leaf years ago, and that brings up another point of the mental aspect. Tom Brady pretty strong mentally, Ryan Leaf the exact opposite.
Well, we got week three of the NFL. It's a dress rehearsal week, so to speak. I've soaked in the first 2 weeks of preseason play, and I got to tell you, Steve, there are a lot of teams right now that are nowhere near ready to being ready to be playing real football, let alone dress rehearsal football on Thursday. It's amazing to me. There are a lot of teams that are really behind the curve that have huge, huge question marks, man. And the season's just, it's coming on faster than Michael Phelps to the finish line right now. The New York Giants, Steve, they're a freaking train wreck. They've been outscored 48-10 in two games. They can't snap the ball without fumbling. They can't stop anybody. And it's not like, oh, we're going to turn the switch because they're so great. They're not great. Russell Wilson played the entire half the other day, Steve, which was shocking to me. They got shut out. He was running for his life. Malinsky warned me about the Seahawks revamping this offensive line. The Denver Broncos are nowhere near close to deciding who the quarterback is. Paxton Lynch might be the guy. Sanchez is terrible. There's a lot of question marks going into the dress rehearsal week.
Yeah, it's hard to believe the Broncos aren't going to be a pure underplay all season long with that defense and that lack of offense. Plus, you know, they're just going to have to be so conservative. They're going to be like a 1990s NFC East team running the ball probably every play. I watched a lot of the Jaguars-Tampa Bay game this past weekend. Jacksonville kept their start. starters in well into the second quarter, which was not expected. And they only put up 7 points at that point. And one of the reasons was they weren't happy with the offensive performance there either. And now you see them as a one-point home favorite on Sunday night against Cincinnati. I was a little surprised to see the Jags favorite there, where the Bengals, I think, are the better team if their starters play into the third quarter.
Yeah, good point. And you know what? I don't want to overreact to Blake Bortles right now because the quarterbacks, I don't really panic about. But as you stated, he's been in there with the starters and it's been pretty ugly, actually.
Yeah, I mean, and that's something you have to look at. And the one time it really translates to the preseason is week three, as you said, because this is the dress rehearsal. They'll play up to three quarters. So this is the one week you can kind of handicap somewhat like a regular season game as far as looking at the guys that you know and you're familiar with. But I also use these preseason games to help me with weeks one and two in the NFL. And like you said, the Giants have been sloppy. The Jags offense hasn't done much. And a lot of times you can't just flip a switch and fix that all of a sudden the first week of the regular season.
All right, Steve. So college football. Right around the corner. In fact, the next time we speak, we'll be speaking college football. As we've got Cal, speaking of Jared Goff, we've got Cal going to the land down under. They're playing in Sydney against Hawaii. Spreads 20 points, Steve. Totals up to 63. We'll break this game down on Friday night. We got some late night Friday night football. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, haven't seen too much movement on this game. Most books opened around 20. That's exactly where it stands. And like you said, the total opened around 63 in some spots. Other spots briefly at 61. So we've seen a little bit of money come in. I'll have to check about the field conditions. That's obviously something that's always a concern with these international games.
You know, I did briefly see, well, maybe it was like the initial opening lines like 2 months ago type of deal. Cal 22.5, 23, down to 20. It'll be interesting. You know, I'll tell you one thing about Hawaii. They have a new coach, but they got 9 starters back on offense. They're going to be able to put some points up on the board. The defense could have issues, but it's amazing, Steve. We'll be talking about it. Hawaii flight 10,000 miles before they play a home game. So they're going from Hawaii to Australia, which is pretty much the closest they can go in from the United States, technically. But after that, they go back from Sydney, back to Hawaii, and then to Ann Arbor, Michigan the following week. By the time that second half arrives of that game against Michigan and Harbaugh's just running the football down their throat, Hawaii's going to be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't see Harbaugh exactly being the kind of guy who's going to take his foot off the gas pedal. I think he's going to want to start strong and, you know, treat, even though that is basically a preseason game for Michigan, I think he'll win by a nice margin there. And that really is a factor to keep an eye on, especially when we get to later in the season, like November. Hawaii always puts up a ton of travel miles, but now with that Sydney trip, it's going to be even more extensive this year.
And I know you recently wrote about the Michigan Wolverines. You know, they were 10-3 straight up. You like the over 9.5 season win total. So do I. But I prefer that, Steve, actually getting a piece of them than messing with the point spread, because as you wrote, it's a Harbaugh factor here. And last year they were 10-3, but they were actually only 7-6 against the spread. I think we're going to see this effect with the Los Angeles Rams this year because they play in a sexier city. They're a trendier team, and similar with Michigan, they're overvalued. I think they're going to win games, and I think they could be a playoff team, actually, Steve. But you know, as we see, they're laying 41 in week one. You know, they play basically nearly every game at home in the first 7 weeks. They're going to be monster favorites all the time.
And you just got to wonder if they're going to really be truly tested when it comes down to those crunch games in November and possible playoff or championship games. You know, it's one thing to start strong, but it's another thing to have a cake schedule all season long. We saw Kansas State used to do that back in the day. And I thought Michigan's early season non-conference schedule is pretty easy.
Yeah, they got to go Michigan State. They should be 7-0. They got to go to Iowa and they got to go to Ohio State. All right, Steve, baseball. This is the only thing that really is sort of important. The Olympics are now done. Red Sox and Rays, the Sox are starting to heat up at the right time right now, 8-2 in their last 10. David Price on the hill. Price has really struggled, Steve, on the road. 1-5 in his last 6 starts, 2-5 in his last 7 starts overall, 2-3 in his career against his former club. Yeah, with that being stated, I know the Rays aren't terrible right now, but I still think the Sox win tonight.
Yeah, you know, David Price is one of those rare starters that almost goes 7 innings per game now. Very few guys in Major League Baseball go past 6 innings on average. You got to wonder if that's starting to catch up to him in his later years. He has a very weak 4.2 ERA this year in his 26 starts, but his whip is 1.26, which is pretty decent. Fantastic strikeout-walk ratio, 171 strikeouts, only 37 walks. I think Price still has plenty left in the tank. He's actually had a couple good outings since that bad start against the Dodgers a few weeks ago. I like the Red Sox. You know, I think they're going to make the playoffs. I'm not sure they can do much, though, with their pitching rotation. They're going to have to rely heavily on Price if they make the postseason. But this is a really good offensive team still.
Yeah, and Price's postseason record, is it great?
Exactly. I know. That's the problem.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe does he have a win or is he winless? I think he might. He's like 1-8 or something. It's something ridiculous.
But there again, you wonder about all those innings he pitches, because he pitches more innings than most pitchers. Yep. And, you know, you wonder if that starts affecting him come October. And now later in his career, is it affecting him maybe earlier in the season even?
Baltimore seems to be fading just a little bit, but they're back home. Huge series against the Washington Nationals. Bigger for them than it is the Nationals. The Nationals can sort of coast in a division right now, but the Nationals have problems. Supposed to be Strasburg on the hill tonight. Strasburg is scratched, placed on the DL. That's a big problem for them. He'd been getting rocked in his last three starts. A.J. Cole gets the ball now. Now the Orioles are minus 145.
Yeah, it might have been more value actually going against Strasburg here, because something obviously wasn't right with him, and I guess the Nationals realize that, and that's why they're shutting him down short term, hoping to save him for the playoffs maybe. This guy Dylan Bundy for the Orioles has quietly been very good this year. His four home starts, a 0.96 whip, 22 strikeouts and only four walks. I think this is a good spot for the Orioles tonight, even with the pitching change.
I agree. All right. Now I'm more involved now with the pitching change, but I agree. And we got the Yankees and the Mariners, Steve. Here's an interesting one. I know we both look for spots like this, talking about what happened the day before. Mariners used five pitchers. Their bullpen's gas. They were already beaten down. They got a reliever starting again tonight. He gave him four and a third. Cody Martin last time out. Gave him four and a third. That's all they're really hoping for. But, you know, the Mariners' bullpen is going to be beaten down tonight. It's something to keep our eye on. An interesting number. I don't know what it means, but the Yankees are 14-3 their last 17 games in Seattle for one reason or another.
Yeah, I like these spot plays this time of year where a team is basically forced to use a reliever as a starter. They're not doing it because they want to. They're really doing it because they don't have another option. And he gave up seven hits with those two runs in just four innings last week, just 5 days ago in his one start. Now that's one less reliever out of the bullpen that is already depleted. So this looks like a decent setup for the Yankees, even though Pineda's been terrible on the road this year, 5.1 ERA. So the over might be the safest play.
You know what's weird, though? The Yankees, the Yankees are still lurking. A lot of people are like, oh, they're not interested in the playoffs. They're only four games out of the wild card. The Mariners are only one game out. They're playing right now. maybe they're not thinking playoffs, but they're still in it. It's a big series. It's one cool thing about baseball now. These games really do count, except that Atlanta-Arizona game tonight. That is something else. All right, Steve, so start breaking it down. We're talking Cal in Hawaii Friday night, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, it's really weird. There is a 1AA game. We'll have to wait and get a line on that as well.
Yeah, you're talking about Charleston Southern and North Dakota State?
Yeah, I think North Dakota State's playing this weekend as well. They always seem to finagle their way into that spotlight game.
Yeah, I saw that, Steve. I saw that one. We'll circle that, too. We'll see if we can get it. There should be a number. It's the Bison's first game without Carson Wentz.
Yeah, and once again, why doesn't like every other small rinky-dink team schedule a game this week and get like huge national exposure? Even we'd be talking about them on Game Time Decisions.
Oh, yeah, I know. If I was Central Michigan, I'd be playing. Like we do, of course, Tuesdays only. Hey, Steve, thanks for the time.
Thanks, Gabe.
All right, we'll continue our college football conversation. Joseph Lisi, Go for the Two, will join me next. Game Time Decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues. Of course, last Wednesday, we were rocking Riley's on 35th in Manhattan for the Fantasy Cup draft. And it was real cool. We met all kinds of regular contributors to the program that I had no idea were even going to be there or even lived in New York, for that matter. As I was standing there watching the USA-Argentina basketball game, when I was approached by the one and only Joseph Lisi. GoForTheTwo.com in the house with us right now. Joe, it's always a pleasure, my man. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Gabe. Great meeting you last Thursday night. Always a pleasure. Love the show.
Yeah, you know what, Joe? I didn't know you were going to be there, actually. But, yeah, it was great meeting you. I wish we could have hung out more. You know, we had the draft. It was pretty crazy. And then, time flew by after. But we'll definitely see you again. Of course, you got the Fantasy Sports Network's Ticket to the Game event. We got Notre Dame and Syracuse on October the 1st at MetLife Stadium. stadium. But Joe, let's talk about the AP Top 25. We broke down the coaches poll. I don't want to get into it too much. They're both pretty similar. There's a couple of tweaks. Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma are the top three in both the polls. But something that caught my eye actually about this, since 1999, there's only been two teams who went on to win a national championship after being ranked both number one in the AP poll and the coaches poll, like Alabama are right now. And that was in 1999, the Florida State Seminoles, and the 2004 USC Trojans. So being ranked number one in the coaches and the AP poll has actually been a kiss of death for the last 12 years.
It has been, and when you talk about the top teams in the country, Gabe, I mean, you have a bullseye on your back as you enter week number one, and throughout the season, you're going to get each team's best effort because they want to knock off the top teams in the country in the Alabama Crimson Tide. But you can't take away what Nick Saban has done, four national championships in Tuscaloosa, one more in Baton Rouge with LSU, a solid head coach, best head coach of his time. But Alabama does have the bullseye on their back, and that's not the best thing entering the 2016 season.
I'll tell you what, Joe, you look at the top 10 of the poll, and you might think that it's 1979. You might think it's 1978. It has that. It's a heyday. It's a classic poll. We've got Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma, Florida State, LSU, Ohio State, Michigan, hell, even Tennessee is back in here. It's all the big boys so far. You know, the smaller name schools, they got some work to do, because we talk about it. The polls, man, it's sort of a head start in a relay race, whether people want to admit it or not. And it goes to show that the AP totally has given precedent to the college football powers coming into this year.
Yeah, that's a great point, Gabe. I mean, the Power Five is well represented. The one conference on the outside looking in the early part of the season seems to be the Pac-12. So, I mean, when you look at it overall, it is very interesting. But I do believe that there is parity in college football. At least as long as you're in the top 15, you have an opportunity to make some noise with these top 15 matchups in the first 3 weeks of the season. And we'll see how it plays out. It should be a very interesting college football season.
Yeah, if you look at, like, the top 7, actually, in the AP poll, pretty much everybody plays each other. Clemson, Florida State play each other. LSU, Alabama are playing each other. Michigan, Ohio State are playing each other. One team that a lot of people are crying up there at East Lansing, that people aren't talking about Sparty enough coming into this year, but we can get to that down the road. So the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, they're ranked number 10 in the AP poll, and I'm sure right now the preseason and Coach Kelly would rather be us talk about the coaches poll and the big game against the Longhorns coming up than about six of their players getting arrested over the weekend. Safety Max Redfield's already been booted from the team, arrested with a loaded gun and marijuana. And it's interesting that he gets the boot, but Devin Butler didn't get booted from the team yet. Yet eyewitness reports are he actually like body slammed a cop and punched a cop, got into a fight with a chick, was really out of control, and the cops needed to all pull their firearms to subdue him, basically.
It's unbelievable. We see each and every week now, it seems, on a major college campus, these incidents, especially prior to the season. These are young men that need to make solid decisions to represent themselves and the university, and it's unbelievable. A lot of negativity surrounding this Notre Dame team entering week number one against the Texas Longhorns.
But let's be honest, there is media negativity, yet at the same point in time, Joe, how much impact? One of the kids was hurt, and out of the six kids, basically none of them were starters. The only kid that was a starter was Butler, and he's hurt.
Yeah, that's a great point, Gabe. I mean, I think when you look at this matchup overall, Notre Dame has the edge at the quarterback position with DeShone Kizer and Malik Zaire. Whoever Brian Kelly decides to go with in week number one, they dominated this matchup in South Bend last year, 38-3. And you look at the Texas Longhorns in the 2015 season, they had seven losses. In those seven losses in 2015, they were outscored by a score of 273-146. They're going to make they're going to need to make some strides week number one on the offensive side of the ball. This was a Longhorn team that only averaged 26 points per game and, more importantly, 145 passing yards per game. So a lot of pressure on either Shane Buechel or Tyrone Swoops, whoever gets a nod at the quarterback position for Texas entering this matchup.
Well, I'll tell you what, Charlie Strong is holding his cards close to the vest, and there is a lot of pressure on Coach Strong. The recruiting has been there. He's running, I wouldn't expect six Longhorn players to get arrested before this game. He's running a pretty, maybe from years ago, under Coach Mack Brown, it might have happened. I love Coach Mack Brown, but I'm just saying, he's running a pretty tight ship right now. And I actually wonder if that's, if it actually helps to run a tight ship nowadays. I think you got to be a little bit more lenient with today's millennial kids the way that they are. But with that being stated, there is pressure on him. This is a home game. It's a Sunday night game, too. So it's a standalone, unique situation. It's a Sunday night game. Tickets are going for like $300 a pop up there in Austin for this game. And they've got a quarterback battle going on between Swoops and Buechel, as you just stated. Now, Buechel is the freshman, so he's never played before. But I don't know. It's almost like Donald Trump said to the African-American community, what the hell do you have to lose? As Tyrone Swoops was so bad last year. He was the quarterback when they lost 38-3. I think there's a taste amongst the boosters to give the new kid a chance.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people want Shane Buechel to start this game because of his familiarity with Sterling Gilbert's offensive scheme. Sterling Gilbert was the former offensive coordinator at Tulsa that comes over. But you look at this Texas team overall, Gabe, a couple of glaring statistics. They gave up 30 points per game in 2015, their highest margin since prior to 2008. They allowed 219 rushing yards per game and 233 passing yards per game last year. That was their highest total since the 2008 season, when they allowed 259 yards per game. So a lot of pressure on this defense for Charlie Strong, and the key characteristic can be, can Notre Dame exploit the secondary of the Longhorns? We'll have to wait and see.
I think the Longhorn defense is issue. I don't think it's a personnel issue. I think they're still an elite defense. I think the problem is there were too many three and outs on the other side of the ball, Joe. They were putting in unhealthy situations. There were too many turnovers, short field, fields, quick drives. You're playing in a potent offensive conference like the Big 12. It's pretty hard if you're not putting points up on the board.
Yeah, that's a great point, Gabe. I mean, Texas was opportunistic last year. They were plus 11 in turnover margin, plus 12 at home. So that's a key characteristic entering this matchup. And Texas did run the football effectively. They rushed for 224 yards per game. You look at the Notre Dame defense overall, they allowed 175 rushing yards per game. But in those three losses to Clemson, Stanford, and Ohio State, they allowed 216 rushing yards to those opponents. So that's a key characteristic. Charlie Strong wants to run the football in this matchup. That'll take the pressure off the quarterbacks and, more importantly, the offensive line.
All right, so Strong is saying he's not going to announce, he's not going to tell anybody who the quarterback is going to be. He said that the kids on the team will find out when they need to know, and then he's going to speak directly with the quarterbacks, that they'll know, and then he'll know who the leak is, basically. And he's like, no one's going to know. And he said, I don't want Notre Dame. He was honest about it. He goes, I don't want Notre Dame knowing whether we're going to have the kid throwing the ball or we're going to have a runner in here in Swoops. It's kind of interesting. Everyone sort of wants to like Texas in this spot, Joe. And I'm looking at the point spread right now, and I see the Horns are getting 3 points on their home field. I don't think it's enough, because as I stated off the top, out of, six kids get popped for Notre Dame, it makes for sexy headlines. But in reality, none of these kids were starting in this football game. It's a headache for Kelly. He's got to answer a couple of questions that he probably doesn't want to now. But as far as the game is concerned, I think Notre Dame go in there and beat them.
I agree with you in that point, Gabe, because I really like Notre Dame in this matchup because of the strength of the quarterback position. It's a new system. So when you have a new system, it's going to take growing pains, whether Tyrone Swoops gets the nod or Buechel. There's going to be growing pains in terms of getting leads and progressions down in the scheme. So that's why I like Notre Dame. I think they're solidified at the quarterback position. They have a better offense, and that's why I'm taking the Irish in this matchup.
Yeah, I like them. Texas, I think, will be improved. I think they're going in the right direction. It's a big year for Coach Strong. But with that being stated, Notre Dame are a national championship caliber football team. The Texas Longhorns are not. And it doesn't matter whether they're playing in Austin or not. Check out the home record of the Horns in Austin over the last couple of years. It ain't the Darryl Royal days. Hey, thanks a lot for taking the time to be with us. And Joe, look forward to seeing you again, buddy. We encourage people to check out GoForTheTwo.com. Joe's one of the most well-informed college football insiders in America. Thanks, Joe.
Always a pleasure, Gabe. Love the show.
There's Joseph Lisi with us. We take a quick break. Eric Bachman, one of the sharpest fantasy guys in America, joins me next. All right, Game Time Decisions, Fantasy Sports Network. We're live. Of course, we're now live weekdays at 2 o'clock. The show is now 60 minutes, but it replays at 5:30 Eastern time. We're fired up for some football. It's great talking college football with Joseph Lisi and with Steve Merrill, but I've soaked up as much as I possibly can of the National Football League preseason. So I'm either A, like an extremely devoted professional to my craft, or B, a degenerate compulsive gambler with very, very little social life, or C, a little bit of A and B. But either way, I'm on top of things, all right, when it comes to National Football League teams, and I think it's going to help me from a fantasy perspective. If you want to play some fantasy football, FFPC is a cool place to do it. They've got leagues for people of all different calibers and levels and budgets. Let's bring in Eric Bachman, FFPC Fantasy. Eric, it's always a pleasure. How you doing, my man?
I'm doing good, man. Excited for this regular season to get underway. Preseason just is lasting too long.
Yeah, you know what? They really should cut it to three. The CFL has 2 weeks. I don't think it's enough. They can do three, but you know, at the same point in time, man, you see college football, Eric. They don't have a preseason. Yeah, you watch week one of college football, and these kids come out flying, man. You've got entertaining, good football games being played in week one all the time.
Yeah, totally. I mean, they're ready to go. I mean, they've been hitting on their teammates for, you know, a month, and I think that's what you'd see with the NFL, too. Week one of the NFL season with no preseason, man, that'd be quite the treat for the eyes.
I consider myself somewhat of an historian, but I did not know this. They used to play six preseason games, Eric.
Six. Yeah, I mean, that was before my time. That never would have flown in 2016. That would have been just crazy.
You know, I know this because the 1972 Dolphins, the perfect season, they were 3-3 in the preseason. Because I was reading about the Dolphins preseason, and people are like, I don't know, this is struggling, and this is struggling, and that's struggling. And the writer said, listen, I'm old enough. I was around. The Dolphins were 3-3 in the preseason when they had the perfect year. And I'm thinking, six games, wow. You know what? All kidding aside, though, I think we will get to the day, Eric, where there's 18 regular season games and maybe two or three preseason games.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think 18-2 is probably closer than we probably expect right now, and it might just be more than 1 or 2 years, and we'll be looking at that.
All right, what do you make of knowing a lot of fantasy people are up in arms about the elimination of the probable listing on the injury report? So we got probable, questionable, and doubtful. Probable will no longer exist anymore. A lot of people are thinking, oh my God, the sky is falling. How am I going to know? Yet I'm of the belief, Eric, that if you don't follow the players throughout the week and what they're doing, and you actually wake up on Sunday morning and actually just blindly follow this list, then you actually watch CNN and believe what they say every night, too, as being truth. Because you can't believe. I mean, I get, you know, the NFL's always been kind of nice with this, but it's always been novelty, Eric. I don't know why people are up in arms about this.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the probable tag was always sort of non-existent anyway. I mean, 95% of the guys who are listed as probable ended up playing. I don't think this really affects the doubtful tag too much. I think what it does affect is the questionable tag. You know, we don't know if coaches are going to list guys that they previously would have listed probable as questionable. What we do know is that questionable is going to be a wider scoping definition this year. And I think that for anybody who plays in the FFPC where you have have these, you know, two preseason or two waiver wires every week on Wednesdays and Fridays, you got to pay attention to what your guys are doing in practice to make sure that you have a guy lined up to go on Sunday if one of your running backs or receivers doesn't give it a go. And then Sunday morning, you got to be paying attention to those inactives that are coming out, because there could be a few more surprises this year than we've seen in years past. But I'm with you. I don't think it's going to be a massive change, but I do think it's something that fantasy football players are going to have to pay attention to a little bit closer than they would have in years past.
I will agree with that, that there are going to be more Sunday morning surprises, without a doubt. Oh, like there will be. Oh, I didn't expect that. But without being stated, like you said, you follow through the week, and this is where the deeper knowledge is going to come into play, Eric, in which knowing coaches' tendencies. Some coaches have a you don't practice, you don't play policy. Some other coaches are very lenient. Some coaches feel that way about defensive players. They, you know, they figure if a defensive player can't get through a practice, how he's going to hit somebody. But an offensive guy like a Sammy Watkins, there was often times that he barely practiced, yet he's in the starting lineup after the fact. So I think the knowledge of how the coach approaches things is really going to be important this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this makes, you know, following beat writers on Twitter really, really closely. That's going to be important, too, because these guys know the coach's tendencies. They can tell you, you know, when a coach says something, it usually means that this is going to happen. This is how he's going to treat an injured player, a guy who didn't practice. I think that the closer that you follow those in the latter part of the week and on Sunday morning, the better off you'll be with getting a full lineup out there every week.
Yeah, like you said, though, before, now everyone's going to be questionable. Bill Belichick's going to put like 45 guys on a questionable list. Like, it's just, it's going to be, it will be a headache, but it's not the end of the world. All right, so let's talk about some of the players that have caught, that are catching people's eyes so far 2 weeks into the preseason. I don't want to spend too much time on Prescott. You know, I praised him last week. I told people to watch out for him before even the preseason began, actually. So I'm not shocked he's lighting it up, but, you know, how much fantasy impact is he going to have this year, so I don't want to waste too much time on him. But what's your quick take on Prescott?
Well, I'll just say this. He makes Dez Bryant a lot more palatable as a first-round pick. We've seen him being able to get the ball to Dez in the end zone, get it to where he can make a play, and that's something that Cowboys backup quarterbacks have struggled to do over the last couple of years when Romo went down. So it's got to make you feel warmer and fuzzier about Dez Bryant as your first-round pick.
I like that angle. I like that angle right there. All right, so let's talk about another wide receiver that used to be a quarterback, actually, and it's interesting. I don't know if it's like Orange is a New Black, that OSU quarterbacks are the new wide receivers in the NFL, because Miller's looking pretty damn good with Houston, actually. And now we got Terrell Pryor out of football for a year, shows up and is just lighting it up right now. And it's not just fluky. Like, he's killing it in practice as well. He's a hell of an athlete, so I guess we shouldn't underestimate him. He's got 4.38 speed, and what I'm impressed about, and you saw one of the plays because it was in your backyard against the Packers, what I'm impressed about is he's doing this against top cornerbacks. And, you know, if it happens once, okay, but there's been a couple of now, and we see RG3 can throw a good deep ball. Hugh Jackson likes to throw the bomb. Gordon's out for 4 weeks. Hawkins is banged up. Pryor's been better than Coleman. If the season started tomorrow, Terrell Pryor's the number one wide receiver on the Cleveland Browns right now.
Yeah, I mean, Corey Coleman's been dinged up. Josh Gordon obviously going to miss the first month of the season. Pryor, I think, is a guy that not only, I mean, he always had the height, he always had the weight, the size, the speed. Now he looks like a bona fide NFL receiver, especially a deep threat. You look at our league right now, I mean, he's creeping up into the 16th, 17th round area. People taking him as their last receiver or second to last receiver, just seeing what happens. Or in the draft experts formats, you know, Pryor is a perfect guy to put on your roster later in the draft, and then when he does have those big plays, you know, that go for touchdowns, he's going to be starting for you that week. So the sky is the limit for him. We'll see what happens when Gordon and Coleman are both healthy and out there and playing. But yeah, I mean, Pryor is looking really, really good right now.
You know, I took Wendell Smallwood as my Mr. Irrelevant in a draft last week, only thinking that, you know what, Ryan Matthews always gets hurt, and you know, he could end up with some touches. But I got rid of him already, and I saw Pryor was sitting there, and I just stashed him right there because I got Josh Gordon already too, and the Cleveland Browns defense is going to struggle this year. But one thing we've seen in the preseason, their offense isn't bad. Hugh Jackson is a very vertical coach. He throws the ball down the field, and they're going to be playing from behind. There could be some fantasy numbers here. What's your take on RG3?
Yeah, I think RG3 is in a pretty good situation with Gordon and Pryor and Coleman. And then don't forget Duke Johnson out of the backfield as well, and Gary Barnage coming off the career year. I don't think that he's just going to fall off the face of the earth. So there's a lot of weapons there. Two games against Pittsburgh, I think those could be shootouts. Baltimore's defense isn't what it used to be. Those could be shootouts. So as long as Griffin has the confidence behind him, which, I mean, Terrell Pryor's helping give that to him in this preseason. And, when he has all those weapons out there, the sky's the limit for RG3. He's a guy that's not really being drafted as more than a third quarterback in draft experts formats at the FFPC right now. But, I mean, he could pay off big time with all those weapons and with that schedule playing from behind. So I'm starting to warm up to RG3.
All right. Unfortunately, we got to get out of here already. I wanted to bring up a negative in Demaryius Thomas. At least what I think is, when you look at a quarterback situation with the Denver Broncos, we're a couple of weeks away, Eric. We got 15 seconds. Broncos don't know who their quarterback's going to be. This is going to be a run-heavy offense this year, man.
Yeah, it will be run heavy. I still like Demaryius Thomas. The quarterback play was bad last year. Gary Kubiak's offense really is slanted towards the number one wide receiver getting a ton of targets. So I'm still buying Demaryius Thomas as a second or third round pick in FFPC drafts.
You know what, though? There's a difference. People keep talking about that, Eric. Though Peyton Manning and Brock Osweiler wasn't good. They made good decisions, though, Eric. There's a big difference. Lynch is going to be turning the ball over and doing dumb things and stuff. I think the decision process is something that people aren't taking into consideration enough, but it's an interesting debate. All right, Erica, thanks. It's always a pleasure, man. We encourage people to go to FFPC. You guys want to get into some leagues, they got leagues for everybody. Thanks, Eric.
Thanks, Gabe.
All right, we got to take a quick break. We'll come back with our plays of the day. Well, as excited as we are for football, all we have to lay it down on tonight is baseball. But we got some key, critical, important matchups. Start off with the Boston Red Sox in the Rays. David Price on the hill. He's kind of struggled, but this is why he gets the big bucks, taking on his former team. The Sox are 8-2 in their last 10. I like the Boston Red Sox. Cleveland Indians, they're hot. The Athletics are not. Give me Carrasco on the hill tonight with the Tribe. Why are Oakland losing? They can't score. They're actually 12-3 to the under in their last 15 baseball games. Let's go under 7.5, a low-scoring Indians win. Cubs and Padres. Cubs on an incredible overrun. I think it's 19-5 in their last 24 games over the number. Padres, their pitching sucks. They go over the number almost every day. I hate betting baseball overs, but let's go over 8. New York Yankees, 14-3 last 17 games at Safeco. There's something about this Yankee team, I'm telling you, they're going to be in a mix right to the end by accident. And we wrap it up with a bonus pick. Strasburg's been scratched in that huge game against Baltimore. Give me the Orioles. Other than that, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.